From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
8,089,320 Venezuelans declared their vote in relation to the candidates standing for the National Constituent Assembly.
That was the voice, through a translator, of Tibisay Lucena, the president of the National Electoral Council, or CNE, in Venezuela, announcing that more than 8 million Venezuelans had lined up to cast a ballot in favor of the government-supported Constituent Assembly on Sunday.
It was a very high electoral participation, surprising in the sense that we thought that as a result of the threats, the barricades, the difficulties, all of which were overcome in the style of true Venezuelans.
Those 8 million Venezuelans turned out to vote for a Constituent Assembly which could make changes to Venezuela's constitution. The turnout was despite a campaign of violence led by the political opposition that currently holds a majority in the National Assembly, a body whose power could be curbed by changes to the constitution. That campaign of violence has taken a toll in terms of deaths and injuries on the streets of a number of Venezuelan cities, and included a helicopter crashed into the country's Supreme Court earlier this month. The violent opposition has enjoyed U.S. support since a coup attempt in 2002 under the Bush administration. Former President Barack Obama signed executive orders stating that Venezuela posed a danger to the national security of the United States. President Trump signed a similar order earlier this year. For more on all of that, we spoke with our reporter from south of the border, Tony Solo, from his home outside Managua in Nicaragua. Okay, Tony, what's your take on the vote?
It's a real triumph for the Venezuelan government and a real personal triumph for Nicolas Maduro. And you can see from the reaction by the enemies of Venezuela's government that they recognize that. Because they're doing everything they can. For example, the European Union, whose spokesperson Federica Mogherini, over the last couple of weeks, made a statement saying that they regarded the call for the Constituent Assembly elections as illegitimate, following the lead of the United States government under President Trump.
Yeah, there was almost like a roll call vote on, choosing up sides with imperialism. If you look at the English language Telesur, there was like Mexico, Chile, you know, yada yada yada, all condemned this.
Colombia, Peru, and the Pacific Alliance countries. Actually, that aspect, maybe we could talk about that at more length later on.
Yeah,
because that's quite important. But yeah. And the nitty gritties, and if you ask, well, why? Why do these world leaders of the Western bloc countries, the imperialist countries, the NATO countries, why are they so insistent that this election is not legitimate? And the fundamental reason is something that we've spoken about constantly over the last few months in relation to Venezuela, which is that the opposition do not have anything like a popular mandate,
right,
let alone a majority. And so, and that was, this election was absolutely key in demonstrating that beyond any shadow of a doubt, nobody can credibly claim that the Venezuelan opposition are representative of the Venezuelan people now. Because if you look at the figures, and let's just go through the figures for the benefit of people listening. The total electorate in Venezuela is 19.4 million people.
Right.
Not all of those people voted yesterday, because the indigenous peoples in a couple of states right in the interior of Venezuela, who constitute something over 3% of the population, so that you can legitimately say that maybe 2% of those people are eligible to vote.
Right.
So if you subtract that 2% from the electorate, that brings the total electorate down to just over 19 million. Now, the usual turnout in Venezuelan elections, historically, right through, and as you just said, for all the big ticket votes, right, the major votes, presidential elections, legislative elections, referendums like the recall referendum in 2004, the constitutional reform referendum of, when was it, 2007, 2008, something like that.
Right.
All those elections have had a turnout of 70% voting. So, and that on the total electorate voting yesterday, that gives you a figure of just over 13.3 million.
Yeah.
Now, the actual turnout yesterday was, the number of people who turned out was just over 8 million, going on for 8.1 million. And that is over 60% of the usual turnout.
Right.
And if you look at that percentage, 60%, right? So that means that 40% of the population support in some shape or form the position of the Venezuelan opposition. Yeah. And you could probably knock off 5% for spoiled ballots and the usual percentage of spoiled ballots and in these electoral processes in Venezuela. So, but let's be generous, and let's say between 35 and 40% of the population support the opposition. Now, what that means is that the opposition's key support is what you and I have been saying it has been all along. It's around 25 to 30% of the population, and the rest are don't knows, who independents who vote not necessarily along party lines,
right,
or party convictions or ideology, party ideology. But then you have to take into account the fact that in this election was very special because the opposition totally boycotted it. Not only did they boycott it, but they also staged various activities to try and prevent people from voting. For example, the army chief yesterday stated that a total of 206 voting centres, I think it was voting centres, because in each voting centre there is a certain number of electoral tables for allocating votes to the population. So, but I'm pretty sure he said 204 voting centres. Now, there are 24,000 voting tables across the country. So I think I might have that wrong. I think he must be referring to voting tables rather than voting centres. But in any case, what that means is that a significant proportion of the population will certainly have been intimidated from voting, right? There's
right.
no doubt about
That's
that.
That's right. Yeah, right. That was the point.
But even despite that, Nicolas Maduro and his government got 60%, over 60% of the normal turnout for an election of this kind.
Yeah.
Now that is an incredible triumph.
I think there's another number that's really important, which is if you look at the last two elections, the first, you have the vote right after Hugo Chavez passed and Maduro, became president. There was a presidential election in 2013. And the total vote then was just shy of 15 million. It was 14,951,539, according to the official figures now. So that's as opposed to 8 million now. But more importantly, the 2 years later was the National Assembly vote, which was supposedly, the big piece of evidence of the arrival of this purported conservative restoration in Latin America in Caracas, in Venezuela. And at that time, the opposition took a majority of the National Assembly. Their vote, which was the maximum possible vote for them, the largest vote they've ever gotten, against the smallest vote that the government party, the Socialist Party, has ever gotten, was 7,728. The total vote was 13,353,293 in 2015 for the National Assembly. You had 7.7 million people voted for the opposition, and only 5.8 million people voted for the government. That was when it was clear that the people, the supporters of the government, had sat on their hands to express their displeasure, because 2 years earlier, the opposition had 7.5 million vote for 7.38 million vote for their candidate, for Capriles, and Maduro got 7.5, almost 7.6 million. In other words, about 2 million people stayed home, government supporters. Otherwise, everything was the same. Now we have a turnout, of a huge chunk of that. And that shows us that, in fact, the government support has gone pretty much from 7 million and change to 8 million.
Yeah, and I do think it is legitimate. I mean, some people might disagree, but personally, I think it's legitimate to say that everybody who turned out to vote, in effect, was voting for the government.
Right. The opposition said don't vote, and so 8 million people did vote, and about 6 million didn't.
Right. And among those 6 million, you can be sure that there are a not insignificant percentage of don't knows, who just felt intimidated by the whole situation.
Right. Well, I'm guessing that what happened in essence was you had a swing from opposition to the government position because of what's happened, of somewhere between 500,000 and 1 million people, in a country where the electorate has been generally divided like 52% to 48% in favor of the government, with the exception of the 2015 election, where you had a substantial, a substantive of maybe 20% government support. Sit on our hands vote. We're going to sit on our hands this time. And so now those people came out and voted, and some people that voted for the opposition generally, I would say Capriles in 2013 and 2015, actually came out and voted, which is a support the government position vote.
Right. And it's important to remember that the opposition does have control in important governorships. For example, Henry Capriles is the governor of Miranda. Now he's a leading fascist protagonist of the Venezuelan opposition.
Right.
And he was the presidential candidate back in whenever it was, 2013?
Right.
What he did was, he mobilized his police and security forces throughout Miranda in support of the opposition attempt to stop people from voting, and that happened in Miranda, and also happened in two or three of the border states along the Colombian border, where Colombian paramilitaries are extremely influential via their presence in organized crime in those areas. And it's they, in those areas, they're the ones that are organizing the gangs that that engage in shock tactics to intimidate people in the areas where they would hope to be able to control things in the event of, for example, a secession, some attempt by some part of Venezuela to secede from the state,
right?
And that's one of the scenarios that has been particularly touted all along those border areas, especially in the around Maracaibo and Zulia. Anyway,
right. This is this is, by the way, this is what the U.S. and imperialists generally have done. Even here in the U.S., going back to, abolition and slavery in the 1860s, they secede. But you've got, what they're trying to do to Syria now, what they have done in places all over the world, the Katanga province in Congo back in 1960, South Sudan, you know, wherever you point on the Soviet Union, for that matter, where they capture opposition figures. One of the things they do if they can't take power is to start crumbling the country into little pieces.
Right. Which is what they did to Yugoslavia, right?
Yeah. And one last thing, though. I want to sum the numbers. One other thing I wanted to add here. I'm looking at they had this, the right-wing vote that they had 2 weeks ago, where they called out all of their forces to reject the Constituent Assembly, and they had the maximum turnout that they could have, and that was 7.5 million people. In other words, fewer than the 8 million that voted yesterday.
Yeah,
out of that, 10% of those people don't even live in the country. They're in the United States and other places in exile.
Yeah, but that figure is completely unrealistic.
That's their number.
Well, that's their propaganda number.
The
real number is somewhere between 2 and 4 million.
Okay, but their maximum vote, with them counting the votes, as Stalin reminded us, you know, it doesn't matter who counts the votes. Their maximum was 7.432 million, and yesterday 8 million people voted. In other words, they lost even a rigged election.
Right. And so, and also it's really important to say that nobody can question the integrity of Venezuela's electoral authority.
Right, absolutely.
And because
it's transparent. It's right out in the open. They count the stuff at the local district and they post it on the board and everybody sees that happen.
Right. But also, and the opposition can't claim that there was some kind of fraud when they themselves were the beneficiaries of that same electoral system back in 2015.
That's right. This is the dictatorship. Yeah, the dictatorship that voted them into power.
Yeah, and it's like these claims by the Nicaraguan opposition here that there's a dictatorship. You get the people opposed to the canal saying this individual called Francisca Ramirez. She'll say, oh, we live in a dictatorship. And then in the very next sentence, as if in order to justify their level of support, they'll say, we've held 87 demonstrations.
Right.
And it's just so stupid, isn't it? And
yep.
So then, should we talk about the regional significance of the vote, or should we look at the internal significance?
Well, let's start with the internal and then go to the regional, because let people understand. I'm really close to my limit with people that call themselves socialists and anti-imperialists and all of that, that in almost every case, for some ideological reason, find themselves on the same side as Washington every time there's a dispute, instead of on the side of those that Washington is targeting, like in this case, Venezuela. It's just amazing how these folks, on the one hand, have nothing good to say about any actual socialist government on the planet, and themselves have no socialist governments to show as an example of a perfect one, because what they do is sit in their armchairs and complain about the socialists around the world and chime in on the side of imperialism from fight to fight. Syria, Ukraine, Venezuela, wherever you want to talk. We'll go back to the Soviet Union for that matter.
Right. Yeah, and I sympathize very much with that point of view. And I for a long time, I've given up on what I call the neo-colonial left in North America and Western Europe.
Yep.
But getting back to the internal situation in Venezuela, this really does strengthen the hand of the government. And it puts the opposition very much on the back foot. Their only option now is violence. You know, why didn't they participate in the Constituent Assembly? Because they knew they had no chance of doing well.
Right.
They would not have been able to get their candidates into a position where they could influence in a significant way the outcome of the Constituent Assembly. Because what's going to happen now is that, and maybe people in North America and Western Europe don't even understand what a Constituent Assembly is.
Right.
Because they've never had one. Right? The Constituent Assembly in Venezuela, the propaganda from Western governments is, oh, well, they're setting up a parallel legislature, and that's not the case at all.
Right.
And the Constituent Assembly is designed to look at the current constitution and reform it in a way that will modernize and improve Venezuela's economy, move it out of its dependence on petroleum income, oil income. They're looking at a way of making it more participative than it was. They're looking at a way of guaranteeing the continuation of the various social programs that in Venezuela are called missions, you know, like housing, support with food, support with medical care, and support with a whole range of services that were unprecedented in terms of Venezuela's previous government policies.
Yeah, let's talk about, when you talk about missions, for example, for housing, that there have been a million new housing units constructed in a country that has less than 20 million voters. So you're talking, you know, 5% in the last of, six, 7 years or something. They've constructed housing for about 15% or 20% of the families in the country.
Yeah, and so the one of the important meanings of this vote for the Constituent Assembly is that people want to incorporate those missions and give them constitutional status in government policy. So that means that if a right-wing government takes power, they will still have the constitutional obligation to maintain those missions.
Right, housing, feeding people, education, healthcare. In other words, that we have decided as a society that these are human rights, and no matter who gets elected, the government is obligated to provide, see to it that people have food, clothing, shelter, healthcare.
Yeah, and also stuff like the kind of identity politics that that tends to prevail in the United States, and there are important minorities, sexual minorities, or gender minorities, if you like, and ethnic minorities. There's a whole set of basic rights that the Constitution doesn't actually guarantee by statute, and a lot of them they do. But I mean, for example, in particular in relation to gender rights, and that's going to be an important theme or motif in the deliberations of the Constituent Assembly. So that is the internal meaning of the Constituent Assembly elections. They're elections that will create this assembly that will review and revise the current Venezuelan constitution, and in no way are they substituting the legislative functions, the purely legislative functions of the National Assembly, which is what the Venezuelan opposition and their foreign supporters are trying to argue.
Yeah, what they're doing is they're saying basically the following are removed from the list of legislative prerogatives: looting the economy, creating homelessness among millions of people, denying people education, food, and other things for profiteering or whatever purposes. Those are no longer allowed under law, regardless of who was in the assembly. The rest of it, everybody's free to do as you do normally. And this is a step forward for the Venezuelan people. And now we could say it has obviously implications for the entire region, which has been conducting exactly this struggle for, you know, a century or three.
Yeah, no, I'm in the region. This is a tremendous boost to the progressive forces in the region. And for example, but at a deeper level, and let's go back to what you were just saying about what the meaning of the Constituent Assembly is for people internally in Venezuela.
Right.
Now, you can project that across the whole region, across the whole of Latin America and the Caribbean. And what is the right wing, the so-called conservative restoration, about? It's about the right-wing political parties saying, let's all go back to how we were in the 1980s and the 1990s when you people in the impoverished majority were denied all these benefits and services and rights, so principally social, economic, and cultural rights. under the previous governments that followed our ideological line. Let's go back to that.
Right.
That's what they're saying.
Right.
That is the right-wing political program across the region.
Right. And what you're talking about, when you talk about massive poverty among a massive proportion of the masses, you had a very tiny, very wealthy and powerful elite with a monopoly on power and wealth, in essence, and information, and the rest essentially operating as people to carry the wealth out to the United States, EU, and other places, and otherwise to just shut up, or they get shot, or disappeared, or whatever. They moved away from that.
In many ways, the fundamental issue is one of equality. Now, under the progressive governments that took power from 2006 onwards, in Latin America and earlier in the case of Argentina, and you're talking about Ecuador, Bolivia, Argentina,
Brazil.
Brazil. How could I forget the most important country in the region? And under those governments, under Lula da Silva in Brazil, under the Kirchners Nestor and Cristina Fernandez in Argentina, under Evo Morales in Bolivia, there was a figure recently quoted by a senior figure in the Bolivian government. Bolivia now is now self-sufficient in 95% of its food production.
Right.
Well, and under those governments, there was a huge progress in reducing inequality. For example, in Nicaragua, recent figures showed that the Gini index in Venezuela dropped by 8% just in between 2009 and 2016.
I'm sorry, in Venezuela or Nicaragua?
In Nicaragua and in Venezuela too. The Gini index has progressively declined. The Gini index is a measure of inequality. That index has progressively declined in all those countries, in Ecuador, Venezuela, Argentina, under those progressive governments. The right wing program would be to stop that progress, to put a brake on that progress, and prevent this economic redistribution that has marked these progressive governments that were in power in these countries, and the remain in power in Venezuela. Now that is what this latest election in Venezuela means, that people do not want to go back to those bad old days of inequality.
Right.
They want to sustain whatever impetus can be sustained under current conditions, under the current corporate capitalist-dominated international economy. They want, insofar as progress can be made in reducing inequality, they want it. And you can see that happening in Argentina now. You remember back end of 2015, we predicted that there would be a strong reaction against the right-wing government of Mauricio Macri, who, in a very similar way to the Venezuelan opposition that did so well in the legislative elections in Venezuela around the same time, he deceived voters with fake promises about prosperity and jobs and employment and progress, and a completely bogus electoral campaign. And now he's paying the price for that. And we'll see that in the next few days, in over the next week, when in Buenos Aires has something like 11 million people, the greater Buenos Aires area. And that's about a quarter of the total population of Argentina. Now, in that election, a crucial election in terms of will Mauricio Macri be able to stem his hemorrhaging support? And in that election, Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner is favourite to win by a hefty margin in those primaries. They're only primaries, but that will be a kind of essentially a referendum on Mauricio Macri.
Right. Now, we had predicted this when they first took power there, and also, you know, we had said that there were going to be some very interesting contradictions coming to the fore in Venezuela back when the National Assembly election took place then. We'll talk about that too. Tony, thank you very much. Pleasure as always.
Okay, you're very welcome, Don.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.